We have all had painful events in our lives that can lead to depression, anxiety, addiction, or broken relationships. But here's a secret. It is not about what happened to us that causes suffering. It's the stories we believe about ourselves. Join us as we shine light on how to rewrite our stories, avoid the shadows of shame, and travel along the pathway to joy, love, and connection. It's the Finding Peace Podcast with your host, Amazon best-selling author, Troy L. Love.
I'm sitting across the desk of my new boss. I'd just been hired to be a medical social worker for our local hospital, and I was so excited about my new job. I remember standing in the hall during orientation and seeing the words case manager on the case manager's office right around the corner from where we were doing orientation, and I was so excited. I was jumping up for joy and shout for glee because I had gotten this new job. And so now I'm sitting across the desk from my new boss. And she has all kinds of fun things in her office. I can tell that she has a fun personality. And she hands me the job description for my position. And she explains that this job description is not only what guides us in knowing what we're supposed to do for our job, but it also is the way that they measure performance at the end of the year. And she shows me how in each of the categories of the different parts of my job, there's a place where we are measured for whether we are satisfactorily meeting the expectations of that part of the job. Are we exceeding expectations in that part of the job, or are we falling below the line and needing improvement in that part of the job? And she's helping me understand how they measure that and how it's helpful to have some goals and specific outcomes for each one of those areas so that when we go to our performance review at the end of the year, we will have a clearer understanding of what meeting expectations looks like, what exceeding expectations looks like, and what needs improvement looks like. I was really excited about that. So a little bit about me. When I began working in the social science field, I was working as a case manager for an organization that did a lousy job of taking care of its employees. There was a high turnover rate and the employees were really unhappy. I moved to another position within that same organization and found that that was the same no matter what part of the department I was working in. The company didn't do a very good job of taking care of its people, and so the employees really were showing up because of a paycheck. Some of them were showing up because they cared about the clients, but a lot of them were unhappy, and a lot of them would leave relatively soon after they were hired. And it was sad for that to happen, and I didn't know that there was even a field of leadership at the time. I was pretty young, didn't know that there's actually business degrees that you can go into that talk about leadership. There's psychology, industrial psychology degrees that you can go into to look at how you can help make a workplace better. I didn't know any of that existed, but I was starting to read books like The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I was really eager to learn what could be done to help an organization take better care of its people. I moved to another agency and found that that trend was the same, that people were not taking care of the people who were providing services to the clients, that the business was doing a lousy job of taking care of its employees. And that just drove my desire to learn more about what can I do to be a better leader? What can I do to help an organization treat their employees better? It really drove me to learn a lot about the business aspect of things. And now here I am sitting across from my boss, and she's explaining very clearly what is expected of me. And I ate that up. I was so excited about that. I had never had anybody sit down and explain how I was going to be evaluated, what this was going to look like for me. Now, you already know if you've listened to the podcast that I'm also a recovering addict. And at that time in my life, I was still struggling very much so with my addictive behaviors. And there's an aspect of addiction that's called the control and release phase. And in the control phase, When we're in the control phase, we are white-knuckling our sobriety. And in that control phase, we are doing everything we can to possibly be able to be successful. We're trying to control the situation as much as possible. So when I'm in the control phase, what that looks like for me is that I am actively trying to do every single thing correctly. I'm trying to be perfect in all of the different parts of my recovery that I'm supposed to be doing. I make commitments that are highly unrealistic, such as I'm going to read my scriptures and I'm going to pray. I'm going to do a spiritual practice for at least an hour every day. I am going to be kinder. I'm going to not make any mistakes. I make this checklist of things that I'm going to do that are probably good. It's not that those are bad, but my desire is that I'm going to try and control everything. It's similarly to what happens with people when they make New Year's resolutions. They make these commitments that they're going to go to the gym every day, or they're going to restrict their food intake, or they're going to work on one thing or another, and they are pretty adamant about it. And what's happened is that they've entered into the control phase. They're going to try and control it to the best of their ability. But it's not sustaining. It is not fun. There's no pleasure in it. And so eventually, the control phase stops and we enter into the release phase. And that would be what would happen for me. I would try really hard to be outgoing and friendly and dedicated to my spiritual practice and dedicated to working on my recovery in all these different areas, overwhelmingly so, in hopes that that would prevent me from ever acting out ever again. But I couldn't sustain it. And so then I would move over to the release phase where I would act out. And then I would feel crummy about myself. I'd be drowning in shame. And immediately I'm drowning in shame going back into the place of, oh my gosh, I've got to work on the control phase. I got to be better. I can't do this anymore. I've got to work harder and I've got to work faster and I've got to work more intensely so that this never happens again. And so back and forth, I would go in this control and release phase. So here I am sitting in front of my boss, and she's handing me this job description and she's explaining how it works. And I get this thought. I think I need to make a job description for myself. I need to make a job description as a husband and as a man. I need to go and make a job description for my life. And so I do. I go home and I spend probably about 2 weeks working on this job description. I don't have a copy of it anymore. I lost it over the years. This was about 20 years ago that this happened. But I remember that the job description was 18 pages long. And there were different categories of what I needed to work on. And there was a measurement for what exceptional looked like. There was a measurement for what average looked like. And there was a measurement for what needs improvement looked like. And I had 18 pages worth of a job description for my life. Now, looking back, I think the intention was great. I was wanting to look at how I could measure myself in a way that was effective and using business practices as a way of measurement. But realistically, 18 pages was overwhelmingly impossible. And I even remember sharing it with my wife and saying, look, I've made this job description. And she said, I think you are being way too hard on yourself. I'm like, no, this is going to be great. I'm going to work on this. It's going to be fantastic. I'm in the control phase at that time. And so I adamantly worked on it, tried to check off all of those things on the 18 pages. I did that for a week or so, and it became so burdensome and overwhelming and discouraging, I would then fall back into the release phase. And there I would act out, feel crummy, go back to this list and try again and try again. And in the end, it was so overwhelmingly impossible that I had to give it up. I'm sharing this with you because it is the introduction to the question of the week. And here's the question. Troy, you've talked a lot about dailies. I've heard you mention dailies in your work that you do. Can you help me understand a little bit more about what dailies are and why they're so important and why they're so powerful? That's an excellent question. What I found as I continued to work on recovery. It's not that those measurements are not good or you shouldn't have them. In fact, I think they're very important. They work in the business world and they also work in our personal lives. So it's not that you shouldn't have any goals and expectations like that. In fact, I've talked about it before where my buddy recently ran an Ironman and that was his goal. But he didn't just wake up one morning and run the Ironman. He engaged in daily activities every day that prepared him to be able to achieve that goal. So it's great to have some long-term goals or even some short-term goals, as long as we're not in the control phase or the release phase, because that just makes us feel worse and it's not really effective. It's great to have those goals, but what we want to be able to do is create a platform upon which we can be successful. And the platform that I have discovered to be the most effective is dailies. Dailies are a daily practice, something that we do every day to take care of ourselves in one or more areas. And for me, there's five specific areas that I encourage my clients and colleagues and friends to do on a daily basis, because it helps set up the platform for them to be able to be successful in achieving the goals and the outcomes that they want for their life. The five areas are social, emotional, spiritual, physical, and intellectual. We can add more areas if we want, but I found that doing more than five can be really overwhelming for us. And how dailies work is that you're going to take each one of those categories and you're going to pick one thing that you're going to do in each of those categories for this week. And you're going to make a commitment that you're going to do it every day. At the end of the week, you can evaluate whether or not that daily was effective for you. And if it wasn't, then give yourself permission to change it. So I want to go over each of the categories and give you some suggestions of some things that you may want to consider doing for each of those categories. And I'll start out with physical first. So the analogy goes like this. If you knew that you were only going to be issued one vehicle that you're going to use for the rest of your life, and it was going to have to last you for the rest of your life, how well are you going to take care of that vehicle? Are you going to make sure it gets the proper kind of fuel? Are you going to wash it often? Are you going to change the oil? Are you going to do proper maintenance on it? Are you going to change the tires and replace the brakes? Or are you just going to let it rust and rot out and crash and burn and no longer be available to you? How well are you going to take care of this vehicle? Well, it's an analogy because our bodies are the same. We only get one of them and we have to use it until it wears out. There's no replacement. We can't turn it in for a new model. So are we taking care of our body? Are we trying to be healthy and make sure that we're putting the right kind of things into our body? And are we exercising and helping our bodies become strong? And what we know is that when we take care of our bodies, then our mind and our heart is also healthier as well. When we're looking at dailies, what you do is you pick one thing, just one thing that you're going to do to take care of your body every day. It could be using relaxation or breathing exercises for 15 minutes or stretching. It could be exercising 3 to 5 times a week for at least 30 minutes, doing some kind of cardiovascular exercise. It could be going for a long walk. It could be taking time to go to bed early and getting enough sleep, trying to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep every day. It could be that you spend 10 minutes outside just enjoying the sun. It could be limiting your screen time or putting away your games or your phones and being away from that for an hour or two. It could be that you are going to keep a food journal to record what you are putting in your body. It could be that you are wanting to eliminate or refrain from consuming a particular type of food, a soda or sugar or whatever. It could be that you're going to brush your teeth every day. It could be that you're going to go out in the garden and work or do some kind of other repetitive movement. Those are some ideas about what you're doing something daily could be for your physical health. And so you're just going to pick one thing You write it down on a piece of paper, or there's several habit tracking apps that are available on smartphones that you could put it in there. And then every day that you do it, you mark it off. And that's it. The second area is emotional. How are you going to take care of your emotions? What can you do to care for and give value to the emotions that come up for you every day? Some ideas include celebrating your accomplishments and progress, writing in a journal, using positive affirmations every day and saying that, looking in the mirror and saying something positive to yourself, using media, music, or uplifting media or movies or television or books that you enjoy that helps connect you with your emotion, enjoying beautiful scenery, remembering happy times from the past, creating an inviting atmosphere with lighting, music, and organization that you spend a few minutes in every day, taking some quiet time, meditation, practicing gratitude, asking for help. Those are some ideas of how you could take care of your emotions. It could be as simple as, I'm just going to track my emotions. I'm going to see how I'm feeling every day. Again, you pick one thing that you're going to do to take care of yourself emotionally, and you're going to try it out for a week. And at the end of the week, you will evaluate whether or not that actually helped you feel better, or you didn't notice anything different. Were you able to be successful in doing that or not? One of the most powerful ways of being able to take care of your emotions is practicing gratitude. And there are several ways to do that. We've talked about practicing gratitude in previous podcasts, but it is as simple as writing down three things that you're grateful for and why. And just doing that on a daily basis, research has shown that people who practice gratitude on a daily basis, their overall sense of well-being increases, their depression decreases. It's a really powerful and yet simple way of taking care of our emotional state. The next category is intellectual. What is it that you can do to help yourself learn and grow and develop? So it can be anything from, I'm going to read a book. I'm going to read for 10 minutes, or I'm going to read 2 pages. I'm going to take a class and I'm going to do the homework every day. I'm going to talk to someone. I'm going to interview someone every day and learn more about what it is that they do. I'm going to watch a YouTube video. Is there something I want to learn about? Whatever that happens to be, but you're doing something to take care of yourself intellectually every day. The next area is spiritual. And there are many people who do practice a religion. There's a difference between practicing a religion and practicing spirituality. There's a lot of people in the world who are very religious but have no spirituality. And there's also a lot of people in the world who practice spirituality but don't particularly assign themselves to any predominant religion. I believe that having a belief system is helpful for you as you work through some of the challenges that go on in your life, but whatever that belief system is for you, that's up to you to decide. But connecting spiritually, my definition of connecting spiritually is connecting with something that is greater than yourself, something that's outside of yourself, something that's bigger than you. So for some people, they believe that that is God or a higher power. For other people, that is just connecting with a larger community of support. So your spirituality is how you define it. But for me, it's connecting with something that's larger than yourself. And so what you do is you identify, I'm going to do one thing to connect with my spiritual sense every day to make that stronger. So for some people, that is praying. For some people, that's meditation or reading scriptures or uplifting material. Some people, that's attending church or listening to devotionals, reading devotionals. Some, it's repeating spiritual affirmations. For other people, it's volunteering. It's going out and doing something kind for somebody else, trying to help somebody else. For some people, it's listening to music. Singing. Those are just some ideas. These lists are not exhaustive, but it's what can you do to connect with your spiritual self. The last category that we're going to talk about is social connection. And when we're talking about attachment wounds, nothing heals them faster than healthy connection. And I break social into 3 areas. If you have a significant other, then I would recommend that you do something every day to connect with your significant other and let them know how much you care about them. There's a value and appreciation exercise that Dr. Gottman talks about telling your spouse in one way or another what you appreciate about them every day. You could write a note, you could send a text, you could tell them to your face, you could call them. It's whatever that works for you, but finding a way every day to let your significant other know that you appreciate them and you value them. The second part of social is if you have children and you would do the same for them. Finding a way to let them know how much you appreciate them, how much you value them, how much you love them unconditionally. Trying to find a way to connect with your children, similarly to how you're connecting with your significant other. One of the ways that I found this helpful is Gary Chapman's work, The Five Love Languages, where he outlines different ways that we can express love physically, verbally, with our time, with acts of service or giving gifts, and finding a way to connect with each of our children and our significant other in a way that is meaningful to them. So that could be one of your dailies, is I'm going to find a way to connect with my significant other and my children every day. The third part of social is connecting with your support system and your friends. Finding a way to make a connection with somebody every day that's part of your social support system. I often talk about the list of 12. Having a list of 12 people who you could reach out to at any time and be able to talk to them about what's going on in your life and be able to get support from them. And we can go into more detail about that in another podcast, but basically, when I talk to people about this list, usually they have maybe one or two people on their list. They don't have very many people to reach out to, which can be very isolating and lonely, and that only exacerbates the attachment wounds when we are lonely and not connected. And so finding a way to connect with them, whether that's through text or calling them on the phone or going face-to-face, using video app or whatever to find a way to connect. And there's an episode where I interview Matt Wheeler and we talk a lot about the importance of connection. But that's a daily practice. Finding a way to make a conscious daily connection with at least one person on your list. So we have those five areas: social, emotional, spiritual, physical, and intellectual. And we set a goal that we're going to do something in each one of those every day. And then we check it off. We use the habit tracking app or we use a piece of paper and we just write down, did I do it? Did I not? One of the pieces that I found to be particularly helpful in doing these dailies is having an accountability partner. Being able to share with that accountability partner, hey, I did my dailies today, or hey, I didn't do all of my dailies, I only did some of them, or I didn't do any of my dailies. I've found, and I talked about this in the last podcast, that having a partner who's willing to do the dailies with you is actually very helpful because, at least for me, when I'm doing them all by myself, it's really easy for me to say, oh, I'm going to be lazy today. I'm not going to do it today. But knowing that I have someone who's doing it with me helps the accountability, and I'm checking in with him every day and saying, here's how I'm doing on my dailies. Knowing that I'm doing that actually helps me. And what I've found as I've been doing the dailies is it does make a profound difference in my life. When I'm doing the dailies, I'm more able to recognize when I start to go into the control phase of things. I'm also able to see when I've slipped into the relief phase. I'm able to start taking a look at, well, what's going on? What part of my dailies am I lacking? What can I do to change those parts of my daily so that they become stronger for me? And then I continue to check that in. I am always updating my list. I'm always working on what can I do to get these dailies better so that they really are being the most impactful and meaningful for me. My goal is to get all five done before I drive. Getting all five done before I leave the house and get in my car and drive to work. Sometimes I'm not able to pull that off, but the goal is to try and get them all done in the morning so that I got them done. I've been able to connect with my kids. I've been able to connect emotionally. I've been able to connect spiritually. I've been able to work out, do something to take care of my body. I've been able to do all of that, all five, before I drive. The one that maybe is the hardest to do is the social in the morning, because me and my buddies and family and everybody are all getting up and running around. But I do have an opportunity to take my children to school in the morning. And so that's one of the ways in which I'm able to connect with them. Five before you drive, that's the goal. Don't get into the control and release phase and beat yourself up if you don't get all five done before you leave the house. Do as many as you can in the morning so that you can be successful, at least being able to check some of those off, so that at the end of the day, when you're checking in with your accountability partner, you can say, hey, look, I was able to get this many done. And I've just found that doing it in the morning makes it easier, because oftentimes I get distracted by the end of the day and I forgot that I didn't do my dailies. So I've shared with you some examples of dailies. I would love to hear from you what your dailies look like. I'd love to hear how checking in with an accountability partner helps or doesn't help. I'd love to hear if you have questions for the podcast that we can answer. What I know is this. When I had my 18-page job description, that was too overwhelming. It was good. I think my intention was wonderful, but it was too overwhelming. There was too much to do, and I eventually gave up completely. Dailies are a lot more manageable. You can add more things to your dailies if you want. But what we're doing with the concept of dailies is we're practicing self-compassion. We're saying, I'm going to be kind to myself. I'm not going to overwhelm myself with a million things that I'm probably not going to be able to do and then feel ashamed because I didn't do them. I'm going to set myself up for success. So I'm going to do one thing in each one of these areas, and I'm going to track it every day. I can change it if I need to, but it's my way of doing self-care. It's my way of making sure I'm taking care of my emotional, spiritual, physical, intellectual, and social needs to make sure that at least I did something in each one of those areas every day. And I found that those who are consistent on doing their dailies, they feel better about themselves. Just the sense that I accomplished it, it reaffirms that I can do things. It reaffirms that I am able to accomplish something today. So I encourage you to write down your dailies and to begin doing something every day in each one of those five categories, and just track it and see if it makes an impact in your life or not. I'd love to hear more from you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Finding Peace podcast. If you loved the show or want to ask a question, let us know by going to troyllove.com. There, you can also learn about the Finding Peace 5-Day Challenge. Remember to subscribe to this podcast so you won't miss the next episode. And if you are listening on iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating. It helps other people find this podcast more easily. Thank you for spending part of your journey with us. Copyright Finding Peace Consulting.